Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. Professor Zada, we were talking about the application of your thinking to material goods, and in a world that appreciate material goods, that's a real important place to show that your thinking works. There is a much broader context in which your thinking works too, isn't there?
Yeah, I would say so, but since there are many, many, let's say, angles to your question,
it
would be difficult for me, to cover all of the issues that arise. So I'll focus my attention on just a few, but with the understanding that there are many more that I could talk about if we had enough time. So let me focus my attention on just one particular issue. And that has to do with the following, that at this point, we are in the throes of two revolutions. One is the information revolution. And revolution perhaps is not too strong a word to use. And the artifacts of this revolution are all around us. Internet, web, fax, cellular phones, all sorts of things that are changing our lives in very visible ways. But in addition to that revolution, there is another revolution that is not quite as visible. But the impact of this revolution in the long run may be comparable in importance, and that is the intelligent systems revolution. We find increasingly that there are gadgets that we use, systems that we use, that have are much smarter than the devices that we used in the past. And I coined a term that I think at some point will gain wide currency, MIQ, machine IQ, to describe that. Mm-hmm. So that we talk about IQ in the case of humans, but we can also come up with the concept of MIQ to measure the intelligence of machines. And so what is happening right now is that that MIQ is increasing. And it's increasing in ways that will affect our daily lives. We are beginning to see it not to the same extent as we see in the case of the information revolution, but it's there. Smart cameras. You notice that answering machines are becoming smarter. TV sets are becoming smarter. There are all sorts of things that are becoming smarter, and consumer appliances becoming smarter. Now, fuzzy logic, but in association with some other methodologies, in particular with neural networks, genetic computing, probabilistic computing, makes it possible to increase the degree of MIQ, a degree of intelligence of these machines, to a considerable greater extent than would be possible if you stuck to conventional ways of building intelligent machines. So it's not that fuzzy logic will affect your behavior in the sense of making you more happy or less happy when you read a newspaper, or perhaps deciding whether you want to marry some person or not to marry. Not in those ways. But it will affect it rather profoundly in coming years through the development and existence of all kinds of devices that will be smart enough to affect the ways in which you live. Let me give you just one quick example of that sort of thing. Something that people have been talking about in the past, but is not in existence as yet. The personal digital assistant or something like that, I think that Scully, was talking about for some time.
Beam me up, Scotty. That's Scotty.
Scully.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Apple Corporation.
Guy who's no longer in charge of Apple.
Right.
Yes. Now, so what we don't have today, but I think you'll agree with me, it would be wonderful to have. It would be something that would be like sort of personal secretary.
Right.
You could carry it in your pocket, the size of a pager, perhaps. So you could talk into this thing and you say, well, I met such and such a person, or I paid $12 for a cab, or I did this, I did that, and so forth. So all of that information would be recorded. And then at some point, you could query this thing. And so you could say, tell me now, whom did I have lunch with on such and such a date, or how much money did I have to pay for my room? You can go back, and it would be very much like having a secretary in your pocket, you see.
and tell that device to please do my expenses for the month.
Exactly. Yeah. In other words, you would issue high-level instructions of the kind that you can issue to a human secretary. Do this, do that, all sorts of things. Now, today, we can't do it. We can't do it. The technology is not there. But in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, whatever, we will have things of that kind. And those devices will use fuzzy logic and also these other methodologies in pivotal ways.
And in other words, are those who say we co-evolve with our tools.
That's right.
Which takes us to a new place.
That's right. Furthermore, you will be able to access, through this kind of a gadget, an internet or something like that. So you would not be limited to what you put in. It would be more than just a recording device, you see. You would have access. So you could ask a question like, where is such and such a hotel located in such and such a city, or what's the telephone number, you know, all kinds of things. I think that it would be mind-boggling, I think.
Well, and so much of that is hidden. I mean, the fact that there is that much fuzzy logic buried in washing machines and such is kind of surprising. I came across something the other night, I think is in the range of what you're talking about. My sister-in-law is a surgeon, and she was needed to know something about a disease, and she went actually with a colleague, took her and sat her down at the computer, and they ran through a search engine that is partly based on fuzzy logic. And she was amazed at the quality of information that came back on the basis of a simple English sentence.
And the fact that language is at the heart of much of what you
and
do is
language
very
is very fuzzy, very fuzzy.
And you have created tools to begin to put some kinds of handles on language, have you not?
I think so. However, I must tell you that within the linguistics community, I think that there will be very few people today who would have many good things to say about fuzzy logic. Again,
well,
they don't know really what it is.
Yeah, well,
not that they know. They don't
that,
know.
Because there is a certain discomfort that you as an explorer, as a pioneer, as the master, as the guy who's thought it up, there's a certain dis-ease at this ambiguity and pot shots. Is there not? Don't you have to stand up and be counted in very real ways?
The standard model of a scientific revolution, and you may be right smack in the middle of one, is that you have to gain converts, you have to communicate what the new model is, you have to solve problems that the old model wouldn't solve, and you have to get credit for solving those. I might also add, you have to have a good model.
Yeah.
People forget that, but it seems that you what you're describing is sounds to me like you're partway down that path, but we're not there yet. You're not there yet.
Well, we are not there yet because it takes time. It really takes time. I see that
and effort.
Time and effort. Now, I don't want to spend my time on trying to convert people. If somebody is antagonistic toward fuzzy logic or skeptical, fine, it doesn't bother me. However, what I see increasingly is that the younger people today are much more receptive to this sort of thing than the older people are. By the older, I mean within the academic community in particular, you know, because people become set in their ways, they have established a reputation, they're loath to put aside their expertise and embrace something else. But their students are more willing to do that.
Well, and in a way that mimics evolution, doesn't
it? Right.
The upcoming ones can think a little differently.
And part of it is in changing the context. If the physician is using a fuzzy search engine, not because it's a fuzzy search engine, but because it works, then the context in which people address these things is different.
That's right.
Which gives us all hope for being able to change and adapt in our own personal settings, doesn't it?
That's right. Now, what surprises me sometimes is learning that fuzzy logic has been used in certain fields that I knew and didn't know that that's indeed. Let me give you one example. Last August, a conference was held in Scotland, and the title of the conference was "Are All Concepts in Chemistry Fuzzy?" I was a little surprised because, you know, I had been following that literature. So that was the title of the conference, "Are All Concepts in Chemistry Fuzzy?" And so I come across examples of that kind, you know, fuzzy thing in medicine, fuzzy thing in anesthesiology. It's used quite a bit. But it's used in fields that, in ways that I know nothing about. In other words, it comes as a surprise to me. But what it points to is the fact that there is a growing realization in fields, in many, many fields, that fuzzy logic has something to contribute within that field. That this very deep commitment to classical mathematics, classical ways of dealing with classes, and so forth, that perhaps impedes the ability of people working in those fields to come up with results, to useful conclusions. And in mathematics itself, incidentally, I want to mention that there is a lot of work going on in mathematics. I asked our math library to come up with a list of books and papers that were reviewed in mathematical reviews, or at least abstract mathematical reviews, which contain the word fuzzy in the title. In other words, it's not nice to look at the content, because you look at simply the title. It's very easy to do that today. And I was surprised when there were about 718 papers like that, that in the course of a year and a half. Now, fuzzy is not the kind of word that mathematicians like. So to have that many papers in the mathematical literature with fuzzy in the title surprised me. It really surprised me.
We will be back in a moment for a closing thought from Professor Zada. Do stay with us.